and welcome to the rare pleasure that is the Silent London podcast. This week I went to the newly reopened Regent Street Cinema in London's West End. This cinema is very special. It is very much attached to the University of Westminster still, but back when it was a lecture theatre in 1896, it was the first venue in Britain to host a screening of the Lumiere's cinematograph. They are calling it the birthplace of British cinema, and not without reason. It has now been fully refurbished and is open to the public, showing a very intriguing programme of old and new films. I first went to the Regent Street Cinema in October last year, when it was still largely a construction site. I returned to the cinema this week without my hard hat and have to say that it really is very gorgeous. Gilded plaster mouldings, balcony, plush seats and all. I've already marked out my favourite seat, right in the middle of that balcony. If you visit silentlondon.co.uk, you can see a gallery of photographs showing how elegant the place looks now, and also a link to my report from October, when it had a much less sophisticated appearance. I have included a few shots of the projection booth in the new gallery. Notably, for a new cinema, it actually has a film projector. In fact, it has a few. This cinema, I'm told, can screen anything and everything from Super 8 to 4K. A forthcoming screening of Battleship Potemkin in June will play on 16mm, in fact. That one will play with a recorded score, but the cinema has plans to branch into the world of silent film with live music, which is always good to hear. There's a vintage organ in the cinema, which is still in the process of being refurbished, and the artistic director, Shira McLeod, previously of the Riverside Studios in West London, is keen to expand the repertoire of silent films and musicians too. As a sign of the cinema's serious silent film intent, one of the many double bills in this month's programme pairs Orson Welles' Chimes at Midnight with his early first draft silent experiment Too Much Johnson. Details of those screenings are on the site, of course. So first up, I spoke to Shira McLeod from the comfort of the balcony to find out more about her plans.
The programme needs to be informed by the university. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that the students and the subjects who have been studied here will help inform my programme to make me a better programmer, and that somehow or other the exchange of the kind of films that I screen might inspire the students. So, you know, hopefully it's a two-way thing. Mm. And in the long run, to make the cinema a bridge to the industry. Okay. So that, you know, a student can screen their film here and feel comfortable that it's, you know, a proper cinema. And that, you know, with any luck, we engage with various members of the industry to come down and talk about their work. So that, you know, it's a launch pad for work.
Yeah.
That's the ideal.
So there's obviously going to be a mix between very, very new films,
yeah,
by emerging or studying filmmakers, and obviously I've already seen the programme, you do have a few classics.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously as soon as you walk into the space, you immediately start thinking about classic cinema. And do you have any sort of wish list films that as soon as you walked in here you thought, I need to see this film here or show this film here?
I wanted to open the cinema with Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
With live music, mm-hmm, preferably someone like Johnny Greenwood doing the score. This was what I actually wanted to try and do. And I did contact him, mm-hmm, and this was my kind of dream, mm-hmm, and it still is.
Yeah.
So I think silent film and live music, we've got to do it. So this is what I would like to do, mm-hmm, because it's perfect. We have an organ, which is behind the screen, and I must use this. Mm. It's just that it's very early days and I've only worked here for 3 months and it's very difficult to pull these things off. And also, musicians, they need time to rehearse and plan. Mm. So that's one of the things I'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
But all the silence, you know, Pandora's Box and, you know, Sunrise and all these fabulous films, because I think this is one of the, you know, this is somewhere that, you know, this will definitely work in this environment.
I want to ask also, you are looking at your programme, you're going to be showing some new releases here as well. So
yeah.
Can I sort of, how you're choosing those programmes?
Well, I'd like the cinema to really focus on British films,
mm-hmm,
because I don't feel that British filmmakers get enough support, and mm-hmm, I think that especially British independent films.
Yes.
So I'm screening a film called Still with, yeah, Aidan Gillen starring in it, which, mm-hmm, is actually sold out, but it's very brilliant.
Okay.
And there's a film called Bypass. I'm trying, mm-hmm, to really focus on the British stuff mm-hmm, on the first, if I can get a preview of a British film,
yeah,
you know, that would be ideal, really. Because of just the history and the location, I think it's important to acknowledge it, really.
Okay. This is possibly the most interesting West End cinema I've ever been to.
That's very kind.
I don't think there's anything else like it in London. I'm trying to think of a comparison. I'm thinking of places that can cultivate an audience or that can show, you know, repertory films, but there's something... This is not that.
I was really inspired by the Scala, and I think most people sort of who've worked or been around the film industry for a long time were also inspired by the Scala. So that's what I hope we can, you know, bring back some of that kind of spirit, you know, and if it means, you know, double bills or whatever it is, I would hope. I don't think we could ever be quite as rock and roll as the Scala, but I'd like to take some of the spirit from it.
So will you be involved with the sort of the Scala-rama programming?
Yes.
Awesome. Oh, fantastic. And double bills. What's the magic of a double bill?
The magic is just the chance to see two films in one night that have some kind of connection, essentially, whether it be the theme or whether it be the actor or the director. It's just, I guess it's a kind of film education, really. I think they still have value.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
On my visit to the Regent Street Cinema, I was also lucky enough to talk to Anna McNally from the University Archives, who had plenty to tell me about the early history of the venue. You'll have to excuse some of the background noise in this clip, I'm afraid. We were sitting in the lobby, where last-minute preparations for a day of press tours were taking place.
We use the archive for the Heritage Lottery Fund bid, and then obviously as the process with the architects happened, we showed them the building and they all came in obviously to look at what we had in the archive, which was quite amazing because we were quite used to looking at those photographs, and then you have an architect come in and look at them and they point out all these things and you're just like, oh, I hadn't seen that. So that was really great for us and we learnt a lot. And then for the last 2 years we've been working on a book which is coming out on June the 3rd, I think it is, or 6th. Beginning of June, anyway, with my academics from the university about the architectural, legal, and film history of the cinema. So again, we've learnt a lot through that process. So that's been really great for us.
How important do you think it's going to be to the people who come here to see this kind of history on display?
Well, I hope it'll help give people a kind of sense of context. I mean, it's the same space where the Lumiere showed the cinematograph, but it's not the same. I mean, it's been changed over time. But for me, certainly, that's kind of fits in with the history of the cinema because it's been adapted so many times. So it's built in 1848, and then adapted again in, it was 1881, 1894, 1927, you know, and it started out as 1,500 seats, and now we're down to about 300. It used to go 30 foot lower and 30 foot higher, and obviously people would be squeezed in on benches. And one of the really interesting things that Rose Bankey, who wrote about the architectural history for our book, sort of pointed out to us is that the point when it becomes a cinema, so when the Lumiere show the cinematograph for the first time, is actually the point when it looks least like a cinema. So we didn't have a stage at that point, and it had been redesigned by Quentin Hall to look like a meeting hall, and it was used for boxing matches, it was used for prayer meetings, so there were seats all round the sides looking into the middle, and that was actually the configuration when it becomes a cinema. So after that, obviously, they then cinema architecture kind of overtakes it, and it then has to turn itself into a cinema, even though it's the first one. But sort of being the first cinema, it could never actually look like a cinema, because the films they were showing in the 20s and 30s were really different to everywhere else in London. So they weren't showing feature films. Because of the terms of the lease, it had to fit in with the educational sort of thrust of the Polytechnic. And so what they had was they had people like explorers and people who climbed Everest coming in, and they would show short films that they'd taken. But if you think at that point, you know, the kind of camera equipment you're carrying around, if you're on an expedition, you couldn't shoot a two-hour film. So they would also show magic lantern slides. Sometimes some of the explorers brought back people from the places they'd been to, and some of that was quite controversial, where they were bringing back sort of dancers to do traditional dances and sing traditional songs. And so it would, we know from one of them that the, it was the Kutrites, I think they were, who drove across Africa. And they were very interesting because they were obviously very interested in advertising. So they took this car across Africa so that the car manufacturer could say, this car was driven across Africa and survived. And they had it in the entrance hall here so that people could come in and see this car that had driven across Africa. And they took a record player with them. And throughout their program, there's pictures of kind of natives being forced to listen to records. And again, they had the record player in the lobby. This record player survived in the African desert. You know, you too can listen to it at home. So I think there's kind of really interesting research to be done there for people about the sort of early history of advertising combined with cinema, and the way cinema at that time was sort of, you know, short films combined with other entertainments rather than just this kind of quite passive sitting there and watching. It was, you know, they had a narrator there and there was someone who was very much kind of involved with it. So although we think of kind of silent cinema now as being these feature films, they were having these silent films, but then they were finding ways of bringing in the music for them and narrating them, so it wouldn't have been a silent experience for the audience.
Are you going to be building on more of the archive material that you have?
That's completely up to the programme director, Shearer. Okay. I mean, we're showing Le Vicomte's Man in the first month, which is the very first X-rated film, and we were the first place to show it. And that doesn't get shown very often because it only exists on 35mm, I think. I saw it a couple of months ago at the Goethe Institute, but that's the first time it's been shown in London in the last 5 years that I'm aware of. So, because I've been trying to see it, you can't get it on DVD.
No.
You know, it's really great that we're actually showing that. And one of the great things that we've got here is kind of all the different types of technology, so we can show any different kind of film. So everything through from Magic Lantern to kind of current digital films. So there is loads of opportunities there for us to show films that other people haven't got the technology to
discuss. I was wondering if there's anything you can tell me about that first Lumiere screening. Do you know sort of who attended and what the reception was?
The very first one was a press screening.
Mm.
Yes, so that was an invited audience, so I think 54 people. And what we know about that is that they were kept waiting for half an hour because there was loads of problems with the electricity current, because at this point in London there were lots of different currents running, so trying to get stable electricity current was quite difficult. And we wouldn't have had electricity as standard in this building. They put electricity in during the 1910 rebuild. So in 1910, the entire 309 Regent Street was knocked down, apart from the cinema and our swimming pool. The builders asked to put electricity in just so they could have electric light during the rebuild, and then afterwards they kind of thought, oh, well, there's no point taking it out, we've got electricity in there. So electricity wasn't standard in 1896, so they had to play around with the current, and it was actually one of our students here from the Polytechnic who managed to get it set up, and as a guy called Matt Raymond. And as a result, he was kind of kept on as the projectionist because, you know, he'd managed to work kind of wonders with it. And so they showed the films, and then at the end, Felician Truy, who had come over from the Lumières to present these films, pulled back the curtain. There was a huge banquet on stage, so that probably helped the press to kind of give quite good reports.
Then were they shown to the public subsequently?
Yeah, so then the following day they were shown to the public. Huge success. It very quickly transfers down to Leicester Square, but then stays on at the Polytechnic until July of that year. And they're constantly refreshing it with new films, so it's shown every hour, but then every kind of few weeks or so they'll try and bring in new films. So we have things like the Coronation of the Tsar in Russia, that's brought back so people can see that for the first time. So very early kind of news reporting. So it quickly moves from being a kind of novelty where it's kind of, you know, people leaving the factory to then like very quickly showing people the whole world that they wouldn't have normally had an opportunity to see. So it's a very kind of fast moving genre film where they start out just demonstrating what they can do and then people quickly demand more of it. I mean, we had a lot of exhibitions here of kind of early cinema equipment because we have what we think is probably the first cinematography course in Britain. So in 1913, they start officially teaching cinematography. That then sort of mutates into, in the 1930s, it becomes the first diploma course that's recognised by the Kinematographers Association. They have sort of displays in the entrance hall where people bring in their new equipment and, you know, the general public can come in and see all these kind of, you know, the manufacturing that's going on and the new technology, which is one of the things that the Polytechnic was always really good at. It had an exhibition every year so that people could come in and see all sort of new developments in science.
It's like a sort of cinema evangelist.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. I really feel that I should let you get on to lots of other people. But anything else you want to say about cinema?
Just that everyone should come and experience it. It's I mean, it's a beautiful space. They've done it amazingly. You know, I've been involved with this project for 5 years, and then when I, you know, so you've seen it as a hard hat.
Yeah.
When I walked in 2 weeks ago and saw it for the first time, completely took my breath away. I think it's absolutely beautiful. The way it looked before, I used to be a bit embarrassed about taking people in there because I don't know if you saw it before
yeah.
it was renovated. And you take people in, you'd be like, this is the first, you know, first place that cinema happened in Britain. And we had these kind of fake flowers at the front, and the colour scheme was a bit 90s. And now I think, you know.
The 1890s.
Now I think you kind of really get that sense of it, you know, as, you know, this beautiful, wonderful historic space. So, you know, it's an amazing programme we've got lined up with all these films you can't normally see. So, yeah, just encourage everyone to come.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you to Shira and Anna both. I'm looking forward to featuring many more silent screenings at the Regent Street Cinema in our listings. So thanks for listening, and as ever, enjoy the silence.